You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. All Movie BS is back together again. Do you remember the day when Jeff moved away? Well, he changed his mind and turned around. Now he's back to stay. All Movie BS is back together.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder, the internet's only movie podcast, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, here with my co-host, Jeff Bayer.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Bayer. I'm the host of this little thing that we like to call Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder on OneOfUs.net. That there is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. I feel like it's been a while.
It hasn't.
35 minutes, maybe?
Oh, since we saw each other, you mean?
Yeah.
Thought you meant since the last show, but it hasn't been a while since that either.
No.
Yeah, you know, we just saw a movie. Longtime listeners know that we had been recording the show in the afternoons, and now we've moved back to the evenings.
Yes.
And so sometimes it's right after we've seen a movie. So if the show sounds a little bit more late night, a little darker, a little more laid back.
If it sounds like I might have a beer in my hands.
Or on the, spill it on the table next to you.
That was wine.
Sorry.
Different.
That's right.
Doesn't make sense.
You wouldn't spill beer.
No.
We begin every show with an iTunes review that one of our listeners has written for us. And I'm going to read that review right now in old-timey voice. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm
okay.
Ready.
All right, here we go. It's from Kyle N1692. And he writes, found this show on the OneOfUs.net page and took a listen. Bayer and Snyder have a good rapport with one another and are both very knowledgeable about movies. The show was a great listen for movie fans. Short and to the point. Thank you, Kyle N1692.
Thank you very much, Kyle.
Kyle N1692 uses full name.
Sorry, 1692. 1692?
Yeah, so he's like 324 years old this year.
That's not when Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
That was
right?
It was 1492.
There we go.
He was born in the bicentennial of that.
Oh,
good for you, Kyle. In 1692.
Parents were out celebrating. Oh wait, that's not how it works. It wasn't. Okay, never mind.
Never mind everything.
Never mind math.
Math and history and a whole lot of things. We'll be never minding there.
Well, that would have been a good segue for Warcraft.
We'll talk about Warcraft later.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it right now.
I understand. You still need time.
I need time to process. First, let's talk about The Conjuring 2. The Conjuring was the scariest movie of 2013. I looked it up. I double-checked on that.
It was official?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to make sure that wasn't the year of Babadook or one of the other various things that I've thought were really scary.
Is it really? Yeah. 2013. Yeah, I guess it's been that long.
Yeah. And now here's The Conjuring 2. Ed and Lorraine Warren are the people. Real-life paranormal investigators.
That's right. Based on a true story, the true story that you would have heard of, you, the commoner, would have been the Amityville Horror.
Right.
Which is touched upon at the beginning
of the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine Warren were the ones who investigated that.
It was kind of interesting because before the movie started, I turned to you and said, I wonder if they'll ever, you know, touch on Amityville in the sense of, like, do you think that'll be like Conjuring Part 4 or 5
if they're going to keep doing these stories from the case files of the Warrens, yeah.
If they're going to get to the big case file, even though that's been a movie two times over, three times over?
There've been like seven or eight Amityville movies.
Had no clue.
Counting all the various bad sequels, yeah.
There's been sequels?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Anywho.
And the answer is no.
It seems like no. It seems like they took care of it at the beginning of this.
It seemed like a formality. Like, just so you know, yeah, we know these are the people who did the Amityville Horror, but we've got a better story to tell you. Because while the Amityville thing was going on over in England, even spookier crap was going down.
Because they had accents. Says.
That's right. Accents makes everything spookier.
Actually, no. It just makes it more charming.
Well, it depends on your point of view, I guess. Ed and Lorraine Warren are played by Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, and it's 1977, and they go over to London eventually. Actually,
hang on. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, Lorraine wants you to know they don't rattle, but this one made them rattle.
Oh, that's right. She tells us up front. Yeah, this one. This one rattled her. I wonder if she says that every time.
It's like the kind of her thing. With the rose. This is the most important rose ceremony yet. I'm not saying I watch The Bachelor. I don't. But I had seen one season, probably 15 years ago. I don't know how long that show's been on. I know that's a joke. I know that's a joke that The Bachelor makes.
Yeah. I don't know how you could have seen The Bachelor, because my understanding is the only way to watch The Bachelor is to tweet while you watch it. That apparently is the only way that people can stand to watch that or The Bachelorette is to live tweet it. Please use your hashtag so I can mute you. Anyway, back to Conjuring 2. Yes, so this family over here, the Hodgson family over in England, and they're a dingy little family, poor family, divorced mom and four kids. They love each other, but they got no money. And I like the feel of their like dingy kind of gray house and that very.
You know what I like most, and I wish it would have been utilized even more so, was the block. The fact that they weren't on a stranded home at the end of the block.
Right, they're not out like some little cottage out in the woods. No, they're in a little neighborhood there, on a street.
But you know what they never did? They had an edge, so they had an alley in between their house on one side,
right?
But not on the other. You would have thought at some point the neighbors would have been knocking, just been like, "Can you keep it down?
Oi, quiet them ghosts down. Got work in the morning."
Very polite neighbors that just let them be.
Just let them be haunted, yeah. And so this family, the main thing is the girl, the 11-year-old girl Janet. Mm-hmm. Seems to be the main one that this dark force is sort of possessing her and messing with her. And
While this dark force is doing that, it's kind of odd because it almost feels like the movie gives you I don't want to say it's an accidental misdirect, because it was kind of nothing. But that first, oh, goodness, she's being haunted. Mm-hmm. And maybe her sister even notices that something's going on crazy and everything. It was all about, I'm coming for Billy. And that just disappears. And that was kind of weird. Billy being
the
little brother with the stutter. And so you kind of just get the impression of, look, the family's protecting Billy. Billy's got the stutter. First time the ghost comes around.
Right.
But it's not the case.
Is that because the ghost's name was Bill? Was that the thing? Was that the Bill thing?
I don't think I misunderstood that, though. Like, it definitely – I don't know. Maybe I should see
because I don't remember thinking, oh, they're coming for Billy. I don't remember getting that sense.
I don't know. Maybe it meant something else. Yeah. Maybe it said.
Anyway, it's the same.
It was a little thing.
I will say it's the same thing. I noticed something about the first Conjuring is that there are more kids than the story needs. But the story doesn't need four kids. In fact, there's the other brother, almost does nothing. He's got one scene where he does something. And other than that, I thought it was three girls and a boy until suddenly there's one of them's a boy, too.
I knew that there was two boys because at one point, the mom, Peggy, says goodnight, boys.
Ah, there you go.
And I was like, aha, there's two boys in that room.
But I assume that's historical fidelity, putting all the kids there. But so I like with these movies. James Wan directed this, who directed the last one. He directed Insidious and Saw and several good movies. And I liked it in this case, since we know going in what kind of movie it is, he skips the formality of pretending, oh, maybe there's another explanation. Maybe it's not a haunting, but a something else. Like, we know it's a haunting. Let's just show it to us, get right to the point. And he gets right to he skips over also, for the most part, the part where nobody believes that it's a haunting. Like, it gets very quickly to all the people who need to be on board being on board.
Yeah.
And then later there's skepticism from others. But it's just always so frustrating to me, the part of the movie where we know it's bad and they can't get anyone to believe them.
It is very nice that so far in the two Conjurings that there's a moment where the parent, or at least the old sibling, is mm-hmm. like, go back to bed. And your first thought is, oh, we got to wait another night or another haunting.
Yep.
And so far in these movies, they've decided, okay, you know what? We have to ratchet it up every single time. We have to honor the story moving forward. And it does, even though, I got to say, it felt long.
It does feel long.
The main reason it feels long to me is because then we're also hanging out on occasion with Ed and Lorraine, and you don't see the purpose of that for a while, and you don't feel the purpose of that for a while. The only thing it feels like it does is take away from feeling invested in this small England house, and that's kind of what I wanted.
Yeah.
I wanted more of a concentration in there, more of the nooks and crannies even, because they establish some rooms and some things.
Like the geography of the house, yeah.
But it doesn't feel like it has significant payoff. It just feels like it has like minor payoffs throughout, and that was unfortunate, I thought.
The movie's half over before the Warrens get to London to start investigating, mm-hmm. and I agree with you, but I like what they did with the Warrens. I like how they're making the Warrens characters, and I like what they do with their marriage as a couple. There's actually a couple of like sweet moments in the movie. That I wouldn't have expected. And moments where I kept waiting for the horror beat, and then it turns out, oh no, it's just a nice moment. And I like, and that's such an unusual thing for a horror franchise too, to have like this loving married couple at the center of it. Like,
well,
what a weird thing.
This movie is occasionally hokey.
Oh sure,
like flat out hokey, and sometimes it knows it is, but like it feels like an old fashioned PG movie that just also happens to be R.
Like R because it's scary. It doesn't have any strong violence or nudity or sex or swearing. It's just, it's scary.
It does have that weird, with their use of faith and the fact that Ed and Lorraine are very structured in their beliefs.
Right,
and,
yeah, they're believing Catholics.
And they think it's a complete love fest as far as like where their power can come from and where the what the goal is and all this kind of stuff, to where it is it's not wholesome, but their relationship is
and
the movie honors that. Sometimes it feels misguided, but then you're just kind of amused that you get that moment. Like,
yeah, I'm fine with it.
There is a musical instrument.
I thought that was sweet. I thought it turned out nice. Turned out just fine with me.
I haven't officially decided how I feel about that because it's too easy of a joke. But at the same time, it almost pulls it off.
I think it does pull off. I think it's nice. I think it's a nice moment. Yeah. Also, well, that's too spoilery. But I like the way it plays into the movie.
Well, and there was a moment also which I. Maybe you noticed it, maybe you didn't. And since it doesn't matter, I feel like it's okay to talk about it.
Okay.
There's a dog in this movie.
There is a dog.
But the dog just kind of disappears?
No, we see it again at the end.
I know. But that's also weird.
Well.
Because, but like, where was the dog in the whole middle? Like, we see a dog in the beginning and the end.
It's their neighbor's dog. It's not theirs.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. It's his dog. Anyway, every night something interesting happens, whether it's a bit of sleepwalking, whether it's some loud knocking, whether it's this.
It's all the, it's all the stuff that happens. You know the things that happen. That stuff happens.
There's actually a good dream sequence in this movie too.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed purposeful, and that was nice to see, because normally dream sequences just waste time.
I like the way James Wan uses the camera. The camera moves, but it's generally pretty smooth, and when it's handheld, it's not jittery. And there's a really awesome shot, a long shot, where Patrick Wilson is in the foreground on the left side of the frame, and the possessed girl is on the right side of the frame in the background, and she's out of focus. So we can't see what's happening with her face and all that. And I think that's a great effect. And lots of little things like that with the camera work that makes a difference. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you don't notice it as a casual viewer, but he's good at using that to increase the tension and use it to make what is – you know, it's a very familiar story, but I think he does a good job making it good. It is too long, but, you know.
It's too long, and even the way that they have time pass sometimes, it makes it less nerve-wracking. There's a part where they kind of just flash forward, and it's probably to get Ed and Lorraine involved because they need publicity to make this story seek other people out, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so it's just like a lot of hits of like, yeah, crazy things are happening, and man on the street says that and this. And it just kind of feels like, oh, it's all right. They're getting on, I guess.
Yeah.
And their house is haunted. And
they're surviving, yeah.
Yeah, they're getting through. It is that stiltedness that just kept me I wasn't that nervous. And I was really nervous watching The Conjuring.
Yeah, this one's not as scary as the first one.
It's not. And the use of – when there are moments of special effects, I got to say, it's not good. There was one kind of toy that
– CGI thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodness. All I was doing was going like, oh, okay. That's what it looks like. All right. Well,
yeah.
I'm not nervous for this character dealing with this thing. I guess I'll just hang out and watch during this time.
You and Rob Hunter are always hung up on CGI. That's what you two have in common.
Here's the thing. You don't need it. If like you can do something else if you can't make it look good. Do something else.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Or yeah. I mean, if it pulls you out of the movie, it pulls you out of the movie. I didn't mind it. It's still – the first one was a B+ for me. This is a B. It's still really good. I thought it was very scary. Could be shorter, but still good, solid stuff. And if there's like this unlimited treasure trove of Warren stories that they can make into movies, not that we need more franchises, but, you know, if they keep making good ones, I'm fine with that.
The first one was a 9 for me. I like having a movie – like scare me beyond belief if I'm going to sit down and watch it. If I'm committed to that, let's go for it.
Yeah.
It didn't do it this time. This is a 6.
All right.
If I could, if I was allowed, which I'm not, and I'm not going to, I'd probably give it a 6.5.
Hmm.
But I'm not allowed to do that, nor would I ever.
I didn't say not allowed to. It's your system. Just,
oh, no, I'm not allowed to. I'm not.
Fresh or rotten on Rotten Tomatoes?
6 is considered fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it?
Yep.
All right. Here's a movie we're going to review. It's called Now You See Me 2.
Oh, now.
Now.
Now You See Me 2.
Now You Also See Me. Why wasn't this called Now You See Me T-O-O?
Now You See Me 2. I don't know. Because
or why wasn't it called Now You Don't?
Maybe because it's not as clever as it thinks it is.
Mm. This, of course, you remember Now You See Me from a few years ago with the magicians. You had your Jesse Eisenberg and Isla Fisher and Dave Franco.
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson. And they were magicians and they, I don't remember, got in some hijinks. Well, now there's a sequel where they have more hijinks.
Mm-hmm.
And just before the movie started, you were saying these sequels really should start with a previously on. And then sure enough, here's the Morgan Freeman character basically gives us a previously on. Who was he talking to in that anyway? He was talking to them, kind of, but like, was he recording a message for them?
It was weird.
I don't know. Anyway, it's later. And Morgan Freeman's in jail. He was...
It's earlier. It's 1984.
Whatever. Mark Ruffalo's dad died. We learned at the end of the first movie that his father had been a magician who died and whatever. We see a flashback to that. And but now it's, the Four Horsemen, as they're known,
mm-hmm.
are hiding. And there's only three because Isla Fisher didn't want to come back for this movie. So instead, there's another girl who's now the fourth horse person instead. And she
Lula.
Is either Lizzie Kaplan or Kat Dennings.
She's Lizzie Kaplan.
Lizzie Kaplan. And the four of them are drawn together they're going to expose some tech company's nefarious plan. But then the tables get turned. There's a switcheroo.
And the eye has a plan for it all because the eye is all seen and all knowing.
The eye was the secret organization or something that controlled all the magicians. I have most of the same problems with this movie that I had with the first one, which start with the fun of seeing a magician in real life is that is that you know that there's some trick to what he did. Either he didn't do what it looked like he did, or he did it in a way that you didn't notice. But you know that he didn't actually use magic, because magic isn't real, and that's part of the fun, is figuring out how did he do that. When you got magicians in a movie doing stuff, the answer is, oh, well, they just edited around it, or used special effects, or, you know, movie magic. And these magicians, and it drove me crazy in the first one, and it drove me crazy in the second one, they keep doing things that just aren't possible. No matter how good a sleight of hand or magician or illusionist or hypnotist you are, they keep doing things that aren't possible. And it bothers me.
100% agree.
I kept thinking they must actually have magic powers.
Lizzie Kaplan, this character is annoying. Just flat out annoying. I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it. It is, she just acts like she should be there a little too much. Without actually knowing anybody in the group yet, or whatever the case may be.
Well, you got to remember, I assume she just stepped in for Isla Fisher and they just did a control F in the script and replaced her name.
And then this constant need of the characters that aren't the Four Horsemen talking about how the Four Horsemen thrive with attention and they need to be on stage and they're for performers at heart. And then when you see them perform, it's just that icky feeling of like watching an okay magician perform.
Mm-hmm. Or what, like a motivational speaker walking around a convention center ballroom
with a mic on their cheek. Yeah. And like it's not good.
I'm going to tell you how to actualize your wealth. What's his name? Daniel Radcliffe shows up. He's here.
Yep.
He's a bad guy. He tries to get him to do a thing. And they have to do some magic to do it.
It reeks of wanting to have the fun that Ocean's 11 movies are good at having. But then it's stilted. Every time they bump into somebody or something, they're showing you – I feel like this movie is utterly showing you its hand – but then not doing some really basic things. Like, here's the thing. Woody Harrelson plays two characters in this movie.
He has a twin.
And there's no reason to have a twin. Whereas you would immediately have thought, there was so many times where I was like, oh, is this the scene where Woody Harrelson, he's going to dress up like his twin now?
Yeah.
He's pulling the switcheroo, because what other reason would Woody Harrelson play two characters
To play this hammy, curly-haired, white-toothed goon is a bad character. Very bad performance. Unfunny.
They're in Macau, and they go to a casino, and the whole time I just was like, why am I, what are they doing in this casino? They keep thinking that they're doing some plotting that is interesting, but it feels like it's just filling up space.
This is another thing that was true of the first movie. Their tricks, their big heists and everything rely on like a million details, many of which are completely out of their control, going exactly right.
Yes.
And they're able to do this on a moment's notice with very little preparation. They happen to wind up in Macau, which happens to be where the best magic shop in the world is, which happens to be – and this movie also reminded me of the Fast and the Furious franchise, in the way that the sequels would start trying to make up ways that the movies were connected. Like, they start making up connections among characters.
Yes.
Not new connections, just connections they never bothered to mention before.
Right. And that's the – yes, because the payoff
– you can feel them trying to expand this into like this big world of magicians and the eye and secret things. You can see them just gunning the engine, trying to make a bunch more sequels.
The payoff of who's involved with the eye is definitely something they did not know during the first movie.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
They 100% didn't know that. And the big sequence here that this movie – just it's in love with itself, is there's a giant computer. They steal a chip that is the size of a playing card.
Coincidentally, the size and shape and weight of a playing card.
And so one guy Dave Franco's character, is amazing at tossing cards. He established this in the first movie. Mm-hmm. He's even like shown his skill on talk shows. Like it's something that he's actually known, even though in the movie you're just assuming that's probably a special effect card.
Like,
that's probably
like everything else. Yeah, right. Probably was.
Like it's like you didn't need to bother doing this, buddy. But anyway, they show that Woody Harrelson's character has been bad at throwing cards for 1 year. Mm-hmm. They talk about it. Mm-hmm. And then they have a day to plan this heist, and they decide the best way to do it is by all of them having better skills than what Dave Franco's character has shown us.
We gotta work on our cardistry, is what he says.
So they do it for a couple minutes, and then they do the heist. And
well, it's a montage. That may have represented a few hours of practice.
The whole time, you're just like, it's just a CGI card. This isn't interesting.
And then they go and they fling it around sleight of hand in the room, and that was the worst as far as doing impossible things and just a very annoying cartoon-level sleight of hand. It made me think of watching a cartoon, like a Bugs Bunny cartoon about a magician and then doing stuff like that.
Yes. But it doesn't have the joy of Bugs Bunny. Or the slapstick fun of Bugs Bunny.
Or the rabbit dressed as a girl rabbit and being sexy to Elmer Fudd.
But it does have Jesse Eisenberg at one point saying, "We're the laughingstock of the magic world." Which it's – because the next sentence, I believe he says, the next sentence after that is, "And the FBI wants us," or something like that. It's like those two things are pretty much – those are the two worst things that he can think of.
And now – I didn't think of it at the time, but now that I think of it, how embarrassing is that to be the laughingstock of the magician world?
Right. Exactly.
A world full of laughingstocks. The first movie was kind of dumb fun, and I gave it a C, but I'm looking at my old review now. I kind of had fun with it up to a point, and it kind of lost me. This one, I didn't have fun with it even up to that point.
No, it looks like a movie, but it's not a movie.
Well, that's part of the illusion. I give it a C-.
I give it a 4, but it's barely a 4. Like, there's one point where Mark Ruffalo is, like, in a full-out action movie doing Jason Bourne stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't care that the character is doing this, and it's only slightly interesting that Mark Ruffalo is doing it. Yeah. That's not a good sign for the movie.
Yep. And then finally this week, 3 wide releases this week. All 3 involve magic and sorcery and supernatural powers and whatnot. Isn't that interesting?
That's so interesting.
Thank you. They're all also over 2 hours long. Also interesting.
If you had to ask me beforehand, Warcraft is the only one that I would have assumed would be over 2 hours.
Because it seems like the epic sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's a fantasy. Oh, you're introducing things. It's got to be over 2 hours. No, got it.
It is. Yeah. It's just over 2 hours.
Just over two.
And this, I don't want to spoil anything, but this movie's really bad.
Oh. Let's see. I wouldn't say really bad.
I did in fact say it.
It's a weird twist for me. The visuals helped.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, with Alice in Wonderland, it was like, I don't care. I don't care that you made it look pretty. I'm not interested at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was interested in taking in this world. Like visually, I really liked seeing the orcs move.
It's funny you say that because as I was watching the movie, or as the movie was happening in front of me and my eyes were seeing it, and thinking about what I thought of it, I envisioned you saying it looks good, and I already had my response planned. I don't care. I don't care. I'm tired of things that look great but are dead inside. Well, I'm also tired of people who look good and are dead inside.
There's a lot of the dead people. So I wrote, one of the first things I was like, all right, it looks like this is a movie that I'm definitely going to have to try to keep track of things. So one of the first things that I wrote, besides like, okay, their clan is dying, so they need a new home. And there's many clans.
The clan of orcs. These are orcs. The orcs are these monsters, big monsters with giant hands, and their heads are too small for their bodies. That's the orcs.
And so then they go to... what looks like Earth, but it's not Earth. through this magic portal. And I wrote down bodies equal magic and then green question mark. Like,
and yeah, that's about right.
And honestly, it doesn't get much deeper than that. Like, it just it is a mess of a film. You know what? You don't watch Game of Thrones.
No.
This is somebody reading Game of Thrones books and saying, I know what to do. I can make a 2-hour movie. And it's just, you can't. There was clearly this need to slow down and explain, but explain in a way that you care about some character. And they didn't get the actors that this movie desperately needed.
Or the writers, or the characters, or the story.
Right, but it could have... There's no actor that brings anything to this movie.
No, it's a bunch
of...
No, because the characters are all... Everybody is dead inside. It's a big, dead pile of garbage. They all got stupid names that you can't understand.
This is true.
Like, and they're all calling each other by the names all the time, but I have no idea what those names are. Hey, Cat Door. What of the doughy face kid? I think his name was Cat Door. Khadgar. There we go, with a K. Khadgar. I was hearing. I knew it wasn't Cat Door, but that's how I said, "Oh, it's the guy." I got to look up Cat Door, see who he is.
I was just annoyed that Ben Foster's character. Ben Foster, by the way, really good actor who just like he doesn't mail it in. There's just not.
No, he's always good.
But like they established that he's the guardian, and I'm like, got it, guardian. Mm-hmm. I can remember that.
Mm-hmm. That's his job. He's the guardian.
Yeah, but then they always are calling him his other name,
Medivh.
Right, but it felt like somebody else's name kind of sounded like that, mm-hmm. and then I was getting lost in that as far as who's who that you're talking about. Plain and simple, you don't know who they're talking about.
I have not had – not since the Hobbit movies have I had such a bad case of who are these people and why are they fighting.
So here's – the orcs are just like, all right, let's just kill all these humans. And
they
got
to take the portal and come to Earth and kill all the humans.
Not just humans. There's other aliens that are not – there's other – what do they call them in this movie? They're not races. I can't remember. There's other beings because there's like dwarves.
Little dwarves and stuff. Yeah, it's all hobbit stuff. Yeah, all your hobbits are there. All your hobbit characters.
These dwarves are just like smushed. They're just kind of rectangle smushes. That's how they decided to make them.
Yeah. But so the orcs going to come. They're going to kill all the people. And the people don't want to be killed. And so they get Ben Foster, the guardian, to help them. And also there's a magic boy. He's a magic kid, this Cat Door.
But he was maybe an outcast, but he chose to be an outcast.
I kind of got the sense.
If he's accepted or if everybody's upset with him.
I got the idea. I got the sense that all magic people were sort of, you know, not welcome here. But he said something about I have left that. Like, I thought he meant that he's left the magic, or he's forsaken.
See,
he's given up the magic oath, and he's cool. You can trust him. I meant.
I took it as in like I quit that, and therefore I should be considered a bit of an outcast because nobody quits magic.
Oh no, I took it as that's why people should be nice to me because I'm not one of those magician guys. I don't know.
Did they in this 2 hours? Mm-hmm. Did they ever explain why he quit?
No. Okay. No. He went back home to Magic World, which is on a floating platform where they got a room with a big black cube that contains correct me if I'm wrong here. I think inside this big black cube, I think that was Glenn Close for a minute. Glenn Close for a minute showed up to be some sort of oracle or something,
so again, because we can only guess.
Right, there's no way to know what actually happened in this movie.
She might have been a previous guardian.
Okay,
that was kind of like the vibe I was getting.
Sure.
So anyway, green is a bad color, except
green because there's a thing that's like this green mist. They call it the fell. Were they saying fell? F-E-L-L?
I don't know. Don't ask me.
I wrote down fell, and this is like a dark magic thing that if it takes over you, it's bad. It kills you or something. And somehow it has become – I guess the orcs brought it, right? Because the magic people
– No. It's a magic that exists, but you shouldn't do anything with it.
Well, yeah, because they're like, it has no place here in our kingdom. But then how did it get there? Because the magic boy, doughy-faced magic boy, Cat Door, found it in one of the corpses.
I, yes, it, I can't tell you if.
I thought the orcs brought it because it's the same color green as their portal thing and all the stuff what they do when they're suck the energy out of innocent bystanders and whatever.
I think there's a different. I'll tell you later. I'll tell you after.
Do you think there's two different kinds of green no, misty magic?
There's only one kind of green, but I think I know how it's involved in this world.
All right.
Anyway, Paula Patton's also in this movie, and she plays – oh, good. Okay. Does she play – my hunch is I'm right on this. Does she play a slave of an – she's an orc slave maybe?
She's a half-breed. When we first meet her, they call her the orc. She's chained up. The orc calls her a half-breed. She's like orc and part – I assumed human, but then they also told us that humans and orcs have not interacted before.
She's playing the role of Princess Leia in Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
She's got that outfit down in the beginning.
Her name is not Corona, which is what I wrote down, but Garona with a G. Garona.
So my Garona went to this because she was dragged there with her chain. But then at one point she's freed by an orc who, by the way, I think I kind of liked that one
the
orc.
The nice orc, his name was Durotan.
Oh, is that
his
name?
Okay. He's our nice orc. He's the chieftain of the orc clan.
Yeah, one clan.
Yeah, is that what? Okay, there's different clans. Yes, that's why there was a lot of whole. In addition to the orcs and the humans fighting each other, there's lots of fighting within the groups, within the humans and within the orcs. Yes, a lot of disagreement.
And I like that dynamic.
That's fine, but you know what? It doesn't make it any less confusing.
It's unfortunate that while the orcs have a lot of layers of good and evil within them, the humans, unfortunately, only pretty much had one bad seed. I could have used a little bit more bad humans if that's the way we were going here. Hey, orcs can be good or bad. Humans can be, well, they're good except for this one guy. Anyway, she gets freed by an orc.
By the nice orc, Durotan.
Captured by the humans.
Right.
And then she is an open book. She will tell you anything you want to know. And she's just like, yeah. I'll be on your guys' side.
Sure.
And I couldn't quite figure out that rationale. Considering there's so many clans of orcs, it seemed weird that she was now just like.
Well, isn't she at that point isn't she in the human world? She's in our realm when she gets freed, right?
Yes.
Well, so I mean, who else is she going to join other than humans?
It just felt quick. I mean, there was still orcs there, but anyway.
The orc was enslaving her, though.
By the way, at the beginning of this movie. It appears guns are invented.
Yeah.
And then for the final battle, thankfully, there was some off-screen training that okay. and some mass production, considering there was a prototype that we saw at the very beginning, apparently.
That's true.
And luckily, it helped out for the final battle.
A little muskets, yeah.
Here's what I liked. Are you ready for what I liked? Because
sure.
I know we just bashed this like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked was this. I could watch orcs battle a lot more. I could. And I liked what I saw there. I liked
like battling each other. Okay. All right.
Just battling. Right. Again,
you didn't care who they're fighting. Just, you like to see orcs in motion.
I like to see orcs.
Like, would you be happy with an orc ballet or an orc football game?
No, yes.
Okay.
And actually orc ballet wouldn't be bad. There's this thing where it's like, oh, let's get a big dance circle, but instead of dancing in the middle, two people will battle or two orcs will battle or whoever will battle, and we respect this tradition. I do too. It's a very easy device, and I like it. I do like the look of the film. It's a very pretty film, and not only is it pretty, it feels unique to see these orcs the way they are. It doesn't just feel like, oh, yeah, they saw Lord of the Rings and they're doing that thing.
The orcs are a very distinctive character design. Very. Really, really great work, yeah. It's a shame that it's wasted on such a garbage movie.
And then here's also what I liked. In the third act, characters die.
Yeah.
And I really thought it was almost going to be something really, really good. Like, I thought a lot of characters would die, but there's still enough character death here that, again, I know you don't watch the show. It recalls Game of Thrones with the sense that there's movement with the story, even though there wasn't any until that third act. And yeah. even when it ends up where it does, I'm not thrilled with it. But for a moment there, I was caught up. I was caught up for just a little while in this story, and that surprised me, and I enjoyed that moment.
Well, I'm happy for you. I didn't feel like anybody died that, like, surprised me that, oh, they killed that person. And to be clear, they kill thousands of people. You mean that they kill a few people who have names. Not yes. that we know what their names are. I could pronounce them. This is one of the – and since orcs bleed green, I guess it doesn't qualify then as horrific, ghastly violence, which is what it's full of. People getting smashed and their heads torn off and –
Only
oh my gosh.
Some orcs bleed green.
I guess the rest don't bleed. And the humans don't bleed at all. They get killed a lot, but they don't show the blood, so it's PG-13.
The
movie is brutal.
There's just some humans in cages that are like in the distance, and all you can do is hear their screams while they like crumble down a mountainside.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, this movie just killed 25 more.
Yeah, this movie is brutal and cruel, but it's CGI and fantasy, so it's fine. Conjuring 2, rated R, because it's scary.
Yeah, that is amusing.
Here's what I like about the movie.
Okay, all right.
I like that it's over and that I will never have to watch it again, and that once I've edited the show together and written my review, I won't have to think about it again, because they're also not going to make a sequel.
Because?
Because it's going to tank, I've decided.
But this is the thing. Tanking is this weird thing. Are you saying it's going to do Pacific Rim tanking? Like,
I don't know.
What kind of tanking are you deciding that this is not going to work?
This is my wishful thinking. Well, it's going to have a great opening weekend because I have it for the box office challenge. It'll have a great opening weekend, and then nobody will see it after that.
So I'm
and
just curious.
At some point,
conversationally,
director Duncan Jones will come forward and apologize for it, and we'll forgive him. And
remember when he made Moon with Sam Rockwell?
That was a terrific movie. Yeah.
Oh, that movie's so good.
Yeah.
Do you think this movie's going to make more than Conjuring 2?
Opening weekend? I don't know. I think Conjuring 2 is going to do better.
Do you want it to make more money than Conjuring 2?
I want it to because I have it for my...
For society?
I don't care about society. I mean, it just... I mean, I do care about society. That's not what I mean. I mean, what movies people choose to go see, I don't think is a reflection on, like, I don't, if more people see the bad movie than the good movie, I don't care. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I really don't care either.
They still make good movies, even if more people see the bad ones.
I can't believe, it's a 5.
All right, it's a D. And now it's time for Question of the Week, everybody.
The Question of the Week.
We asked you, who's your number one movie character crush? And normally, every week, as you know, we always just choose the best answers. This week, we're going to kind of fly through them.
Yeah, because it ended up being a lot of, like, one-sentence answers,
yeah, it's not,
which made sense for this, because
sure,
otherwise
you just
sound creepy or
desperate. It's not, exactly, it's not really an essay question this time.
That's right.
So, yeah, we'll kind of breeze through them. This is, it's interesting, I guess it doesn't surprise me. That we have a lot more male listeners than female. again, I guess I'm not surprised, but maybe the women just need to speak up more. Sometimes we should ask.
Wow. Okay.
What?
So Eric doesn't care about society, and he thinks women need to speak up more. These are the two things that you people should take away from the show.
I suspect we have more female listeners who just are not answering the question, is what I'm saying, and they should make their voices heard. Anyway.
Maybe they don't believe in crushes. They believe in true love.
Maybe because they're more sensible than all these guys. Yeah. Kurt said Cody Horn and Magic Mike. He doesn't know the character's name, though. Some crush you have on that character.
That's true.
Ava from Ex Machina, of course.
I like – yeah. So Eric does – not you, obviously. Currently, Haley Atwell in Anything. And luckily, that also includes the Captain America sequel where she's in the old person makeup.
Sure,
He's into that is what he's saying.
He is, yeah.
Otherwise, back in the day, Jennifer Connelly in Labyrinth. Let's just hope he also was way back in the day.
Well, yes. I assume he means when he also was that age.
Right.
There's a few of those. Well, Ben also says Jennifer Connelly again, pretty much anything from 1990 to 2000, mm-hmm. except for her character from Requiem for a Dream, which I don't know why you would exclude that. It's a lovely. I'm not saying you should marry her, but she's beautiful. But
speaking of beautiful, who says Legolas?
Legolas,
which is
Legolas. Legolas,
which is funny because I don't think Orlando Bloom is all that hot, but Legolas.
Those were Emily's words, not Jeff's.
Those were a lot of M's. Adrian, I like
I agree. By the way, Orlando Bloom is not. Is not particularly hot, but Legolas was kind of his best.
What about in that one movie that I really like that he has a little cameo in?
Sure, yeah.
You don't think he's hot in that movie?
I don't know what movie you're talking about.
Digging for
Mom.
Fire.
Oh yeah, he was in that. I don't know. I mean, whatever. I mean, he's a good looking guy, but I just, you know.
Hey, I like Adrian's. Francis from Francis Ha.
Oh yeah.
I want to embrace her and tell her we can be together and find happiness together. I want to dance in the streets with her.
I kind of have a crush on her, too, and I don't really even swing her direction, but I do like that character a lot.
You don't swing black and white? That seems racist.
It's actually the opposite of racist, because I swing black and white, if that's what you're going for. Somebody else says Viggo Mortensen is Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. That was the problem with Legolas, is he was always competing with Aragorn.
The brute.
For the crushes, yeah.
The manly man.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget the little guy. I mean, come on.
Who?
They were all little compared to those two.
Oh, right.
But there's the door.
Dallas says, despite not being gay, it's Steve Rogers / Captain America. And Kurt points out that moment in Civil War when he adjusts his hold on the helicopter, we were all gay for a few seconds there.
That was a really good moment.
Everyone knows that moment. Yeah. Gay or straight, yeah. Male or female, everybody, you saw that moment, you're like, wow.
It's because there's so many times when Captain America is clothed.
Yes.
I think, to where you're just like, all right, yeah, he's strong. But yeah. Then it was like, whoa, look at him.
He was in a short sleeve shirt there too, a t-shirt, yeah. So you could see the, yeah.
Anthony says Ramona Flowers.
Sure.
From Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Very good pixie dream girl there.
This is what I was looking for. Justin said the childlike empress from Neverending Story. And then Dallas also points out, since these are supposed to be current crushes, some of these answers are creepy. And I guess we said number one movie character crush, which I guess doesn't necessarily mean of all time.
Right, so you could choose.
But Justin, the childlike empress from Neverending Story. I hope he's not like the girl in Ex Machina. She's hot, but she's no childlike empress from Neverending Story. I hope that this is a legacy crush, an emeritus crush.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She also is nominated from Paul in Death Proof, which means. She's the only character that's been nominated by multiple people. I mean, sure, you got Patty saying Mark, Mr. Darcy, and Bridget Jones, Pride and Prejudice, Colin Firth version, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
She showed up twice, that actress. Over on Twitter, Jesse said, currently it's Poe Dameron, a fine choice, Poe Dameron from Star Wars.
Good.
Longest standing crush is Paul Rudd from Clueless. Also a very good choice.
We have Mickey's going with Mia Sarah as Sloane in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Mm-hmm, so freaking pretty. Sloane was amazing.
She was amazing.
I loved Sloane.
Andrew says Paul Newman from Cool Hand Luke. Yeah, Paul Newman was a good looking man.
Andrew's just into eggs. That's probably like his thing.
It's like his fetish. The scene where he eats all the eggs, yeah.
And it's like, well, that's the only movie for me then.
That's the only movie. That's
true. Poor Andrew.
So they need to make more egg-eating movies for Andrew's sake.
And not fried.
That's no,
not
you know what, Andrew? Go see Angry Birds. It's all about the pig stealing the eggs. There's lots of egg action in that.
But it's animated. Would it be the same for Andrew?
I don't know. He's the one with the fetish. Ask him.
Nick says Catherine Zeta-Jones in Mask of Zorro as Elena in Mask of Zorro. Meh. She never once did it for me. I don't understand why. I don't know why. It was like I was told to find her hot, and that made it unappealing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Chrissy is the other half of my answer. Chrissy's answer is Cary Elwes as Wesley, the pirate.
The Dread Pirate Roberts.
Pirate Roberts in Princess Bride.
Yes.
I'm going Princess Buttercup.
Robin Wright, yeah?
Is it actually...
You're on the record as being a strong proponent of Robin Wright.
As I said that, I was actually considering just switching it and going like, actually, I want the Congress. I want that Robin Wright, the one that has been through it.
Well, but yeah. Well, that's the thing is that the Robin Wright you want, or is it the character? I feel like the Buttercup is a better, more.
I want Buttercup. I want Buttercup because she hasn't been through hell yet.
And, yeah, exactly.
And maybe she never has to be. Mm-hmm. Although, wait, has she been through hell? No, she hasn't been through hell yet. She was almost put through hell, but Princess Buttercup has led a good life so far, and hopefully. Well, now, see, here's the problem. Hmm. She's always going to be thinking of Wesley.
And you're always going to be thinking of Lisa and your children. It's really not going to work, no matter what.
Who and the what now? Joe says Cher from Clueless.
Oh, another Clueless, yeah.
Interesting, Joe. Interesting.
Why is that interesting?
She's annoying. Isn't Cher a little bit annoying? Rudd finds a way to love her.
I can see,
because they're family, though.
I can see finding her, annoying. I can also see finding Frances Ha annoying. Kind of all in the eye of the beholder there, I suppose. I had a very hard time narrowing down my answer.
Oh, a hard time? Second answer for me absolutely is, as far as lifetime goes, Sandy from Grease. Michael
somebody
that,
said that,
and
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
Yeah, growing up, huge. That was it. I loved Grease. Loved.
Huh.
And I loved Sandy. Especially
right.
Especially at the end. I couldn't
well,
get
sure. Oh, sure, when she's slutty at the end, obviously.
Oh, when she just whores it up at mm-hmm. the end, mm-hmm. It was otherworldly.
Yeah. I think I've arrived at my final one. But I will probably change. Captain America is a great choice. Captain America is a pretty strong crush for me.
Is it when Bill Paxton is in Weird Science, but then he's like transformed into something? Is that like so you just want that specific transformation? Is that what's going on?
What?
When he's turned into crap.
What does that have to do with Captain America, though?
Nothing. I'm just like, you decided it wasn't Captain America. It wasn't Chris Evans. So I was like, okay, what's the worst version of
Oh, gotcha. That's my default answer. But then also I was thinking back like all time, and I had a serious crush. I really liked the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, Peter Parker.
Huh.
Yeah, those two movies. They only made two of them. With him and
no,
Spider-Man.
No, there's just
the two. Just the two.
You liked him when he was dancing to the beat, walking down the street.
Not as much then. But I loved those first two movies anyway. And I liked that character a lot. But then also, I think this is my answer. I think my final answer, I think.
Mary Poppins?
No, but she's
that's
honorary.
Right.
She's honorary.
I thought you were going to actually say
she's
that.
Honorary because that is a non-romantic crush, I don't know what I have with her. It's not
do
quite
you want
a crush.
Her to defend you?
I want her to tell me what to do and to stand there and be pretty. She is very pretty. And I want her to be a little disciplining and to withhold some of her love from me, but still, you know, show love. But no, here's my answer. I think it's Ferris Bueller.
Oh,
yeah, Ferris Bueller.
Answer.
You know, obviously very cute, and going sure. back to when I saw the movie, of course, 1986. You know, I was
safe,
at the right age to
safe,
be
safe, clean.
Mm-hmm. Well, not too safe. Like he's a rascal. He's a rascal. He's fun.
Sure.
Yeah,
but he's not like it's not like he's gonna put a shiv in you.
No, he's not trouble in that way. Yeah, no.
Right.
I think it's Ferris Bueller.
You don't like a bad boy.
Not too bad, no.
No. No Tyler Durden for you.
Tyler Durden. Maybe no. No, no, no. No, because he's a figment of someone else's imagination. That can't end well for either of us.
So you're actually thinking about like
like real world, how it will work. I can't be with Tyler Durden because he's a figment in someone's imagination, but a high school kid from Chicago in 1986. He and I, you know, just fine. Yeah.
He's just here. He was 18. Totally cool. Don't worry about it. Buttercup is 18 too, right?
Sure.
Buttercup's
sure.
18. Everything's cool.
Whatever you say. Question of the week for next week is, what's the best movie death?
That's it. What's the best movie death? Mm-hmm. You get one answer, people.
One answer, yep.
We'll put it on the Twitter. We'll put it on the Facebook. You can email us. Everything is possible here at Movie BS with Baron Snyder. You just go to moviebs.com and you take care of it. Mm-hmm.
Somebody pointed out, by the way, you can also answer on Twitter, which someone did, but then she also emailed because she realized that we had not said that Twitter was an acceptable way to answer. But yes, you can. That is perfectly acceptable.
We have to make the Twitter thing more meaningful.
I don't think Twitter's going to catch on.
Okay.
But yes, you can answer via Twitter if you choose to.
Oh, Eric, we have to talk about this after the show. okay. You know how I'm going to turn 40 this summer?
I do know that.
I thought about it, and I think my happiness lies within our listeners doing a little bit more. And so I'm going to manipulate birthday wishes into more.
Okay. I look forward to hearing how that's going to turn out.
Yeah. There we go.
Our email address, by the way, is moviebspdx@gmail.com.
PDX is an abbreviation that doesn't make sense for Portland.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the airport code, and somehow it became the city's nickname, too. The box office challenge, that's the thing we do. Update that. Now, last week I had Me Before You, and you had the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, you were before me, and then I had Out of the Shadows. Yes.
Yeah. Me Before You only made $18.7 million. Not as big as I thought it was going to be. Not a disaster. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I think disaster in these terms are pretty much like
$10 million.
Yeah, 10 or less, and then you're like, oh, my gosh, what did I do?
And this was my number 10 choice, which, as you point out, means it's going to be the lowest grossing one.
Sure.
And your Turtles, $35 million.
Which
pretty good.
Industry, so far, of my three movies, the industry has decided they have underperformed. That would be correct, right?
They all did less than people expected them to, yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? Maybe I expected them to only do this well.
Yeah, and then none of them are flops.
Maybe I did.
So, and then this weekend coming up, I have Warcraft, which again is going to have a huge opening weekend, and then no one will see it after that.
And that's your ninth choice,
right?
And then I took The Conjuring Part Deux, which was my sixth choice.
Yes.
So we'll see how those go. So, for you number nerds at home. If you remove Civil War from this equation, I am crushing him.
Right, right.
But which is
another way of saying, you know, if you weren't winning, I'd be crushing you.
He had the first pick, and he didn't have to think. So then he decided to choose Captain America,
the
Civil
one that was going to make the most money.
Because that's what you do if you don't have to think. Whereas
if you have the first pick,
every pick I had to think.
No, you didn't.
Every pick I had.
You actually, you know, we record these shows. I could prove to you that you actually began the draft by making excuses for how badly you're going to do.
I'm just saying. If you look at the results.
Yeah, I know you're just saying, but what you're just saying is nonsense.
Oh, hey, Eric, I was thinking about this, slightly related, but I was thinking if there's a way that I figured out to make this much more complex.
Oh, good.
Not for this summer.
Okay.
But here, listen. You take out the top two and bottom two outliers, because outliers are like things. No. There's three categories of winning. There's one, there's the total, and then two, there's only the middle six and their average. Mm-hmm. The average of the middle six, because that's really the core of like what you're hoping for and rooting for. And then there's also the head-to-head in number places. So in other words, your number one versus my number one, my number two versus your number two, my number nine versus your number nine.
And somehow you take all these different factors and come up with one winner?
Yes, because there's three different categories of winning.
Right, right.
And then it'll be like either 3-0 or 2-1. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. No, we can definitely talk about not doing that.
We can make it much harder in the future, and I think it would be really cool to do it.
Yeah, no, we should definitely discuss.
Because then the true champion – I think I'm going to crunch the numbers in the past and figure out like how this would change things in the past. And then I might go back in time and do – I don't know.
If you go back in time, don't forget to kill Hitler.
I'm really just going to focus on this box office.
Well, I need you to kill Hitler. As a personal favor to me, will you please kill Hitler?
We'll think about it.
All right. Hey, speaking of Hitler, I have a new song about Trump. Let's put it at the end of the show, should we?
Yeah.
All right. Tack that on there.
No, Eric, we shouldn't put this song that you
were I was gonna mention earlier that I forgot, but then you mentioned it. No, I mentioned Hitler. Anyway, Hitler came up. Doesn't matter who mentioned Hitler. The point is we've reached the end of the show.
If you look at Eric's notes for this show, the only thing it says is mention Hitler. But then again, that's your notes for every show.
That's actually what it says at the top of every show,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Don't forget,
mention Hitler.
So to recap, The Conjuring 2, I liked very much. Not quite as much as the first one, but still recommended. And you liked it a little bit less than me.
I think it's a dip down, unfortunately, but it's still worth sitting through.
Now You See Me 2 is not good.
It's not worth sitting through.
Mm-hmm. And Warcraft, also not worth sitting through.
It's really messy.
I disliked it even more than I like Now You See Me 2. But yeah, not good. Not good. Question of the week, tell us what is the best movie death. And that's all then, right?
That's it.
Okay. Well, until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.
She's got the money her father worked for. Hates facts and science, hates Mexicans more. She found her hairpiece washed up on the shore. That's why the lady is a Trump. Business or marriage, hers go down the tubes. She loves her daughter, but stares at her boobs. She's loved by racists, white trash and rubes. That's why the lady is a Trump. She wants that huge, huge, beautiful wall, 100 feet tall. They'll pay, olay. On IQ rankings, she's below Forrest Gump. That's why the lady is a Trump. She likes most people if they're the right shade. Muslims and tax laws are what make her afraid. Loves Taco Tuesday, that's what she calls her maid. That's why the lady is a Trump. The First Amendment is her one complaint. Her skin's the color of Lucifer's taint. She's not like Hitler. Hitler could paint. That's why the lady is a Trump. She's gonna start some nuclear heat because of a tweet. Kaboom! We're doomed. Her family crest depicts a fire at the dump. That's why the lady is. I said that lady is. That's why the lady is a Trump.